Today's presenting sponsor is Simply Safe Home Security. We can't calm the news cycle, but we can help you feel more calm and secure when you're at home. Simply Safe is for people who want real proactive protection because the goal is to stop crimes before they start. Traditional systems wait until an intruder is already inside your home. Simply Safe works with a double layer of defense outside of your home to keep intruders out. If someone's lurking, AI-powered cameras alert live agents who can talk directly to intruders and let them know they're on camera and the police are on the way. Early action is better than after the fact to deter crime. There are no long-term contracts or hidden fees. You can cancel anytime. Named Best Home Security Systems by U.S. News and World Report for 5 years, running 60-day money-back guarantee so you can try it and see the difference for yourself. I set up a Simply Safe system, incredibly easy to do, customized it for my home, and it's really reliable. The app was great. The customer support was great. It really gives you peace of mind. I definitely recommend it. This month only, take 50% off any new system. This is one of the best prices you will ever see for Simply Safe. Don't miss it. Hit Simply SimplySafe.com/crooked. Again, that's SimplySafe.com/crooked and lock in your discount. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm Jon Lovett.
I'm Tommy Vitor.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
It's that time of year again when we answer your most burning questions about the year we're wrapping, what's coming next, and all sorts of personal stuff about Lovett.
Okay.
Then we'll be confronted with our New Year's resolutions from last year, as we always are.
Love this.
Gonna come clean about how we did, and
yeesh.
As always, we're going to make some new ones about 2026.
You bet.
You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. New Hampshire Avenue asks, cosplay Republican strategist for a minute. You're headed into a midterm year. You control all of the government and you shat the bed and everyone knows it. Dems will run on a simple change affordability message. What's your best possible counter message? We're going to start off by doing some work for Republicans.
Do we get to do things or just say things? Because the best counter message is you ditch the tariffs, you extend the ACA subsidies.
Oh no, I think
you pitch on gas prices being down.
I think your actions.
You go to war with the Republicans you have.
Thank you. Okay. That's why it was. That's it.
Yep. Okay.
Dan, you want to go?
Dan?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. So I've given this a little thought. I find it alarming. But so my first step is, I storm into the Oval Office and I say to Donald Trump and Stephen Miller, "Your plan to make this election about immigration and crime will not work. It's doomed to fail." No caravans, no crime stats. This is an affordability election, and we cannot win by trying to change the subject. That cannot happen. Will not work. So, as Tommy said, there is a way to do this, which would be to actually lower prices. But we're not going to do that because we're Donald Trump and Republicans. That's not how we operate. So instead, the goal here is to disqualify the Democrats as vehicles for change and as people who you would trust to actually lower costs. So you run a hard negative campaign showing Democrats focus on all things other than costs, use a lot of photos and videos of Biden and Kamala Harris, and you try to associate these Democrats with the economy that people hated just 1 year ago. And then probably, and this is the most I think you could expect from Trump, and you probably can't even expect this, is Trump starts saying, we have made progress, we have to make more progress, give me more time. And that's your plan.
Yeah.
Can't beat that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because that is, you got the negative part. That's what they always do. They just can't seem to get Donald Trump to deliver any kind of a self-aware message.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Dan. Like, you want to say Democrats, if you like Democrats, they just want to raise your taxes again, give the money back to illegals. And if they don't get their way, we've seen what they do. They're going to shut down the government again. It's going to be gridlock. And they're probably just going to investigate and impeach Donald Trump the whole time. That's what they're going to spend the next 2 years doing. And also, they can take your hard-earned tax dollars and just give them back to all the illegal immigrants, which Donald Trump stopped. And that's why you got to keep voting for Republicans so that Donald Trump can keep your taxes low and get interest rates down. He'll probably, they'll be promising interest rate cuts, I'm sure, and make sure you're not paying for illegals' health care.
Yeah, I think you said that cleanly enough that they can grab it.
Cool. Hoping to see that on the five.
One also note, I do want to say, Jon, that it's cosplaying, and you're just
Did I say cosplay?
You said cosplay.
I can't pronounce anything. Cosplay.
It's costume. Sort of,
what a non-nerd you are.
Cosplay. Yeah. Cosplay. Obviously. I've said it cosplay a million times.
I know, sure.
Something happens with me with some
too.
Words.
Me too, actually. We
pronounce
both
them 100% correct all the time, and then just...
When you see it, you say it wrong. I do the same thing. Start getting like, what? Thing.
Yeah. Well, it's also cosplay Republican strategy. Just start a sentence is like a...
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Oded Haas asks, how much of what RFK Jr. is doing is reversible? To the country, not to himself.
I mean, a lot of it isn't, right? I mean, RFK killed off like a $500 million investment into mRNA research. Can't really fix that. He killed off a bunch of like long-term studies. There's a big measles outbreak in South Carolina, Arizona, and Utah. Can't really fix that one. But I mean, I think you can like fire all the kooks on like the vaccine advisory panel, roll back some of their dumb recommendations, like not giving babies the vaccine against hepatitis B. Like there's some things, but there's some damage here that I think is going to be like generational, unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll never know the cost. There'll be people that'll be harmed because they'll get measles because they had a pre-existing condition, but somebody else didn't and didn't get the vaccine anyway. But I do think in terms of research, it'll be measured in the time it takes for us to make up for the grants that weren't given. Like scientists are ingenious and eventually they'll get the funding. Like this research will be done. We just don't know how long he's delayed certain discoveries.
I worry about the brain drain of like the people who left.
Big time.
Doctors, medical researchers, scientists, experts that have been there for like years and years and years at HHS. And,
yeah.
You know, maybe you hire some of those folks back, but I'm sure some of them are thinking, why would I go back into government if this Democratic president just gets thrown out of office in 4 years and then I get fired again?
Yeah. Also, like life gets in the way. Like you move from Atlanta, you start a new job. Like you're not just going to go back because Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is gone.
Yeah, by the way, just these are institutions that have incredible international credibility that have done extraordinary work like that. That is being burned.
Tom Daschle was right, asks. Dan, was this you?
I don't even know what Tom Daschle was right about in this instance.
Me neither.
Everything.
Where do you guys stand on Trump's physical mental decline as a political factor? Who wants to take this one?
I mean, I think it's very fun to talk about because it'll piss Donald Trump off. Mm-hmm. I think you can easily shame the media into covering his little nappies, little sleepy time in the cabinet meetings. Like, it's a political matter unless he runs for a third term. It doesn't really matter, you know?
And then, in that case, we have bigger problems.
Yeah, we got bigger problems. I mean, if he does try to run again, we should certainly focus on the fact that he's old and losing it and weirdly slurring his speech and
constitutionally ineligible.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. What I wonder is the ways in which it's affecting him politically in terms of his inability to wrangle people in Congress, keep people on board, like the way his aging is hurting him as a second order thing. Like the whether it's losing votes on Epstein, it's posting things about Rob Reiner. Obviously, he said crazy things before, but like I do think like. I don't know. He's sort of slowing down. His days are getting shorter. He's saying, you know, even like pardoning all the January 6 people. Part of that was just like he was bored in the meetings. He's like, ah, fuck it. It's too complicated. Like there's he's tired. He's tired. He's tired. Early
that's
in the day.
Why he, that's why he pardoned the January 6 people.
Part of what he did say that he was sick of the meetings where it was hard to draw the line. And I do think there's something about like the moments in the meetings where you get fed up, where you're exhausted, where you're getting kind of run down by these people in any direction. Like there was meetings, Biden had that, right? They were just, they would just sort of make a decision and be done.
That's how the staff at Crooked gets Lovett to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meeting.
Ask me before the day winds down at 2:30 p.m.
I think they ever prank him. He like falls asleep at the Oval Office. He just like put his hand in some warm water. And
draw a little penis on his face. He's like, who draw this enormous penis on my face? This is the most ridiculous giant penis I've ever seen. There's a comically large penis on my face.
I will just say,
oh no,
I understand. I know. I understand the focus on Donald Trump's mental and physical decline, and I know that it comes from what we just went through with Joe Biden. And I think
you mean the country turning on a great president?
Yes, and I think if Donald Trump. Yeah, was getting ready to run for a re-election in a second term, then of course we should be talking about this all the time. I don't really understand the purpose, we're talking about politics, the political purpose of pointing this out all the time and then yelling at the media to cover it like they covered Joe Biden and all this kind of stuff, because what is the goal? Is the goal to make Donald Trump less popular in the sense that he's not going to be on the ballot again, right? And so are we trying to say that, well, if he's less popular because we hit him on the cognitive decline, then Republicans who are actually on the ballot are going to somehow be less popular because they stood by Donald Trump and said that he's super strong and has a lot of stamina. I just think there's a lot of other more effective attacks.
John really changed his tune on this since he got that book deal with Jake and Alex Thompson.
Fake Tapper.
Yeah, he ghost wrote that book. Did a great job, by the way, the book. Favreau. They didn't put your name on the cover.
No,
did a
but
great
I was
job,
in there.
Ghost
the Clooney op-ed is where you nailed it.
Yeah, I just don't understand.
I'm in the same boat.
I don't understand it.
I would separate.
It's not because I don't think it's not fair. I'm just like, what? Why am I wasting my breath on? Why are we all wasting our breath on this?
Yeah,
when there's
just a good ass time.
We're trying to win back the House and the Senate, and then to elect a Democratic president in 2028.
I'd separate two things. One is the political merits of focusing on Trump's age, which I agree with everyone is minimal, and it really is like Biden revenge is what we're doing. And which is why everyone's yelling at Jake or Alex. And I get the sense of unfairness, which is...
Revenge is a dish best served old.
That's really good.
Okay, I'm just going to step right past that. I do think that the media has an obligation to cover the health of presidents, particularly old presidents, whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And when Trump has weird things like an MRI, they should be demanding to know what the MRI is about. And it will be unfunny.
And know that they're going to be lied to because we're lied to about everything that happens.
And then they should be digging around to see if they can find the truth, right? Which I actually believe they probably are. Like, they like news and stories, and so they're probably looking for that. But I think that something can be a worthwhile subject of journalistic exploration and accountability but not be a good political message at the same time.
Yeah.
Well said.
That's why I'm glad that Tom Daschle was right. Mentioned this is a political factor, which means that Tom Daschle once again
was right.
Tommy D.
Jared asks, are there concerns regarding the Trump 2.0 administration that in hindsight you either under-indexed on or went too doomer on?
I think I under-indexed on corruption because we didn't know the full
that was
crypto
mine. Yeah,
element.
I was gonna say, for sure.
I think I under-indexed on understanding that all the focus on immigration meant we were going full Monroe Doctrine, and we were going to invade Venezuela and be like the emperor of the Western Hemisphere. I was maybe too doomer on the political competence of this White House. I mean, they have like kind of...
Oh, you like, thought that they would be more competent.
I thought they would be more competent. Yeah. Like they felt pretty like they were rolling in those early days, and now a little less so.
Yeah, I remain surprised he pardoned all the January 6th insurrectionists. That was, I think, worse than I had imagined. I assumed that there'd be some brake lever, at least for the most violent people. Not that he wouldn't pardon people that shouldn't be pardoned, but that there would be some political instinct there. And with that, we all knew the Department of Justice would be politicized. I am surprised that they're not even pretending, that they have Pam Bondi out there basically as a vassal for Trump. Like, I don't know how much better hypocrisy would be that they're pretending otherwise, but in some sense, like, hypocrisy is like a kind of partial payment on virtue because you're at least acknowledging that there are virtues we used to believe in, but they've completely wiped that away. And I think that was that came a little faster than I expected.
Dan, what about you?
I think the thing that
make a joke about it, not the first time you said that.
Yeah. Nice.
I think the thing that Got I me. Underestimated was how just pliant and gross most of the major institutions in society would be. Corporations who could make more money from Trump, I expected to be with him, like the tech guys, the trillionaires standing with him. But just like universities, law firms, meet the Walt Disney Corporation, just left and right, just doing what Trump wants because it's in their interest, when many of those very same institutions were horrified by Trump 1.0, a less bad version of this one. And just like, maybe that's incredible naivete on my part, but just that so much of society was willing just to throw in the towel for their own self-interest.
Yeah, I agree with all those. I think the only one that I was maybe too doomer on was, and I hate putting this out there, it's really tempting fate, but I thought they would have locked up more of their political opponents by now.
Huh.
I thought they would have gone for, like...
Not for lack of trying.
I was going to say, and that is, it is not for lack of trying, but like, if you had told me that by the end of year one, they would have only, they have failed to basically indict Jim Comey and Tish James and everything else is, in some investigative phase, I would have thought that they would have gone further than that.
Yeah.
And I think it is just because of a combination of the courts standing up to Trump. I think there's probably people in DOJ who are still career people.
Putting an insurance lawyer in charge of your prosecution.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then a whole bunch of fucking idiots that are there.
Yeah, which, by the way, is just one place I think we've all, I think we're all kind of instinctively a bit doomer on, is just the, like, the quiet democratic redundancies that exist that don't seem as strong as they are, but are, like, are there, and are defense mechanisms that are kicking in. The courts are one. The fact that this is not some mass mobilization of authoritarian interests, and so one layer beneath all these people are career people and non-loyal people that have that are also buoyed by the fact that he's not popular. And I think we all should keep that in mind, because it's a dog that doesn't bark, but
not just the level of corruption, Tommy, but just how open the corruption has been.
Brazenness is
just
been
is both. You know, it's crazy.
Pod Save America is brought to you by ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol. By now, you guys know I am the world's biggest evangelist for ZBiotics. It is a game-changing product I use before any night out with drinks, and it's called Pre-Alcohol. So ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It is a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. I literally will not have a drink without a ZBiotics first, a ZBiotics pre-alcohol. I always notice a difference. It is like a game changer for me, especially during the holiday season when you're having, you know, maybe that one extra drink that you normally wouldn't, because you know you'll feel it the next day. That's where ZBiotics is just a lifesaver for me. Make the best of every toast this holiday season. Don't forget to bring pre-alcohol along for the ride. Go to zbiotics.com/crooked to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code crooked at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, head to zbiotics.com/crooked and use code crooked at checkout for 15% off.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, Font Guy 81.
Maybe that's Marco Rubio. See, they just ditched Calibri because it was too woke.
I mean, this is just a big department. Topic.
You know, I have to say, I'm with Marco on that one.
Calibri fucking sucks.
Times New Roman's the fucking best. Ugh. Calibri is trash.
Times New Roman is a typewriter font. It hurts my eyes every Thursday, though, because I just learned today from Reed, because this was a topic on Trumbly Online, which will air before this comes out, that you're the person who dictates that we must use Times New Roman. You're like fucking Marco 100%. Rubio over here.
Yep,
so,
I am.
So I think that is antiquated, and you should kind of be willing to be open to change, because it is an old school
personal
serif
preference.
Font. It's a serif font.
We don't have to agree on the same font.
Well, it's not about, well, we can all use different fonts that we find appealing, but it has a kind of prestige.
Dumb casual?
And it's for sure. It has a prestige and like intellectual rigor because it was used in the past, but sans serif fonts are more readable. They are just more legible, which is why why word switched to Calibri. The problem is Calibri is just an ugly ass sans serif font, and there are better fonts. You know, you don't. Helvetica is the king, and if you're going to come for the king, don't miss.
So this wasn't a question, actually.
John's just a classical chauvinist who loves anything Roman. He dreams about the Roman Empire all the time. You're a neo-Roman.
I didn't even think about the Roman part.
Yeah, it is a kind of patriarchal font in a way.
Bronze Age pervert.
Yeah. It is a font of the white male, and so I think that's sort of part of it. You're enamored of the fonts of the.
This is how I'm coming out as a white nationalist. Uh-huh. Just because of my Times New Roman.
Nice. Yeah. That's right.
Making news today.
Yeah. Anyway, the question from FontGuy81 is,
right.
I hate J.D. Vance.
Oh, that wasn't even the question?
No.
I thought it was.
Yeah, I hate J.D. Vance, but it's clear that he's a much better messenger than Trump and is likely to be the nominee. A lot of assumptions there. Why don't they let him do more of the talking?
Reject the premise.
Okay. Yeah, let's go ahead, Tommy.
No, he sucks. I mean, he's more disciplined than Trump, but he's not a better messenger. He's none of the humor or charm that Donald Trump has that has made him a successful politician. He's not like bad, but he's not better.
Anyone disagree?
No, not to us, but you can see Trump as a bully you root for. J.D. Vance is a bully you root against.
Hard.
It's like a biff.
Mm.
Also, it and is likely to be the nominee. What do we think about that?
I think
Love and I talked to John Heilman for his podcast today, and he was like, it's crazy that J.D. Vance is going to be the nominee. I think that there's no way that guy is
he
so unlikable.
It's not gonna,
yeah. Not crazy, but he was very down on the idea of J.D. as a nominee.
And did you agree with him or?
No, we both thought.
I just like it's sort of like right now. I don't know what the most likely. Yeah, sure, he's the most likely person to be the nominee. Is that 10%, 20%, 60%? I have no fucking idea. There's just no obvious person who's more likely than him to be it at this moment.
And you saw Marco Rubio pull himself out.
That sneaky prick will throw himself back in. I mean, the far right hates J.D. Vance, sometimes in part for racist reasons, but also they don't trust him. They don't believe he's like credible. They don't think he believes what he says. He's a shapeshifter. Like,
I guess we have that in common.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
And our love for Times New Roman.
Yeah.
It's exactly. So funny that Rubio in that article definitively says, if J.D. Vance is the nominee, I'll be behind him and I'll get behind him and I won't run. And it's like, wow. I wonder if Marco Rubio, who in this article is referenced for having completely done an about-face on his core political convictions, could find a way out of this.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? He's said the opposite about every person in that article.
Precisely.
To answer FontGuy81's question of why don't they let him do more of the talking, have you seen who the president is?
Yeah, that's
Donald Trump. You think Donald Trump's going to let someone else do more of the talking? Do you think J.D. Vance is fucking stupid? Yeah, the last guy to have his job, almost had him hung.
When I first worked in the Senate, I worked for a senator named John Corzine from New Jersey. And right before I started, or some point before I started, he did this one of those roast dinners. And he said this joke about Chuck Schumer, which is sharing a media market with Chuck Schumer is like sharing a banana with a monkey. Take one bite and he throws his feces at you. And it apparently did not go over well with Chuck Schumer. It went over pretty poorly. But I always think about that. Why is J.D. Vance not taking up more attention? The most dangerous place in that Oval Office is between Donald Trump and those cameras.
Yep.
Did you write that joke?
I did not. Okay. I did not. I really didn't. I did write, you know, Pokemon Go to the polls. Yes.
That was you, for
but
sure.
But this one, no. One of the greatest, Pokemon Go to the polls, one of the memorable lines in politics in the last 10 years. People are like, why did you come up with that stupid line? Why did I come up with it? Why do you know what it is? I didn't. Or did I?
White House Mess asks, J.B. Pritzker said on your show the other day that while he thinks Zoran Mamdani ran a great campaign, he basically only won because he had a deeply flawed opponent and people shouldn't read too much into it, especially about DSA's popularity. Do you agree? He said that?
Is that an accurate description of what he
said? It's pretty close. And it was he kind of swerved to get there, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
My take on
thanks,
it is...
Thanks, White House Mess, for finding the newsy part of that interview.
Nailed it, White House Mess.
My take on it is the lessons you learn from a race in New York City are about, like, what worked and didn't work, not in terms of winning or losing, but, like, what resonated with people? What broke through? What made someone exciting? What points to kind of a style of politics that could be effective in this moment? And I just think it goes way too far to say that the reason Mamdani succeeded is just because Andrew Cuomo was a flawed candidate. I think there are a lot of people that Andrew Cuomo could have beaten. And there's a lot to learn from Mamdani, irrespective of picking the worst person to run against.
Winning that primary is incredible. Like, Cuomo's flawed, but, like, New York is as progressive as it gets, but still, he ran a great campaign. Yeah. I don't think it says much about DSA nationally. I think it says a lot about like Mamdani being an amazing candidate with a great message and great tactics and charm and talent.
Yeah, it would be smarter to learn from Mamdani rather than try to dismiss it because of Cuomo, I think.
Dan, you got anything else to add to
No,
that?
I agree with that.
I don't know if you wanted to take the no, Andrew Cuomo is the reason that he won.
No, and because Andrew Cuomo beat all the other people other than Zoran Mamdani. So
that's right. All right. C. Swayer asks, are there any states you think could surprise us in the midterms? Dan, what do you think?
I think if the Alaska would be the one, like this is obviously a huge long shot, but it's the one race where if Mary Pattola gets in the race, which people expect she probably will and runs against Dan Sullivan, she's a member of Congress who serves statewide because there's only one member there. It's a smaller state where you can, you know, make a lot of impact with organizing and door-to-door messaging and stuff like that. So I think that I would be shocked if we won any, I'd be pleasantly surprised if we won any of the stretch states like Ohio, Iowa, Texas, and Alaska. But I think Alaska gets the least amount of attention and maybe the one that we're most likely to win of those four.
And this follow-up I'm throwing to Iowa native Tommy Vitor. Do you think there's hope for Iowa in 2026?
I think we have to have hope for Iowa because that's going to be one of the stretch states. Like, I'm bullish on Iowa this cycle. It was the biggest change in vote, like in sort of the swing from Obama in 12 to Trump in 16 was Iowa. But this cycle, we've got a big governor's race and a great candidate in Rob Sand. Lovett was just joking about mm-hmm. how much I like Rob Sand, which I do. Mm-hmm. There's an open Senate seat. There's at least three highly contested House races. Then there's like some possible down ballot flips like Secretary of State. But also, it doesn't cost as much as like Texas. You know what I mean? You can compete. Like, Rob can run a great race for like $30 million. It's not going to be like $500 million like the Georgia Senate primary.
Before Ann Selzer kind of disintegrated across Des Moines as she expected because her poll was so bad, Trump tried to make it illegal. like, she had inside of that poll made some predictions about some surprising turns towards Democrats that we have actually also seen, right?
Like, yeah, they've overperformed in a bunch of special elections and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel bullish on Iowa as well. I think long term, it is incredibly important to compete in Texas despite the cost, because like, if you're looking at larger trends, like, we need Texas, and Texas is probably moving more slowly towards us. And
well,
then Iowa
it was.
Is just,
now it's moving. It was. It's moving,
but
back
I also
the other
think direction. It's hard with like, you have a very older population and rural population in Iowa, right? And so I think it's that's tougher. But I think with combination of Trump being president and the tariffs and everything that's happening, I think it's like the year for Iowa.
That's where the farmers are getting killed. Like, all the soybean farmers are in Iowa and Illinois, and their crops are getting decimated. Their entire businesses are going away. Like, people are pissed.
Yeah. Gen Z Boomer asks.
That's a good name.
Huh.
Good name.
I've heard Favreau say on other podcasts that no one in the current Dem field gets him super excited. When did Obama start to get serious national attention as a potential 2008 candidate?
The minute his 2004 DNC speech ended?
Yeah. Think about it this way in terms of the cycle that we're in now. So this would be if at the 2024 convention in Chicago, someone spoke there, gave the keynote address, who just like lit the place on fire and got national attention for that speech back in July. And then Kamala loses, this person wins a Senate seat and is now giving speeches all over the country and generating a whole bunch of buzz by now, for sure. And so is that happening?
Can I dispute that?
Sure.
Well, for okay, you guys, you and Tommy
here comes,
were there.
Here comes Evan Buys guy.
I was going to ask Lovett at what point in Hillary Clinton HQ they were like, holy fuck, where'd this Obama guy come from?
I do remember there was a lot of weight hanging on this flimsy wire hanger that said he promised not to run. You know, that was still in the window where that was happening. And so it was like he wasn't running. That part of it, like, that was like he was able to kind of be free of that while he was in those first 2 years in the Senate. I don't remember when it started becoming real that not only was he running, but he was like a real threat. But I assure you, it was later than it should have been.
So watching this from having worked for Evan Bay, who was thinking of running for president, and talking to a lot of people who worked for Obama, like Pete Rouse and Robert Gibbs at this time, and Steve Hildebrand, who were heckling me for working for Evan Bay instead of Barack Obama, it really was the fall of 2006, when he was out campaigning for everyone, getting massive crowds, going to Tennessee, going to Montana, going all these places that no Democrat would rather go, getting these massive crowds. And Audacity of Hope came out, and he was getting
came out in October of 26. October of 6.
October 6. And then he went on Meet the Press right after that, right after the election, and changed his mind and said he was reconsidering it. But it was like, everyone that loved Obama. He was generous of attention. But it was the fall of 2006 where like, oh, there's a true phenomenon happening here, and maybe now's the moment. And Evan Bayh went to New Hampshire the same time that Barack Obama did, and he dropped out of the race 2 days later.
Tough.
Anyway, that's the timeline. 2028 White Knuckler asks, if you were in a lab and could design the worst 2028 primary candidate possible, what would they sound like? What policies would they prioritize?
The worst?
Can I be mean? On the Republican side, I think it would be the Romney-Ryan ticket.
Oh, I didn't even think.
You just thought of only Democrats.
I was thinking of only Democrats.
Yeah, so was I. Yeah.
Well, there we go. I'll fill this space. You guys are up.
Well, I mean, this is sort of an obvious question, which is like the worst Republican primary candidate would sound like AOC, and the worst Democratic primary candidate would sound like.
I think it's got to be a feasible like kind of version. Like, I think it would be like corporate, you know, anti-populist Republicans in the mold of what the Republican Party used to be.
Yeah. And I think for a Democrat, it would be a corporate centrist, Kristen Sinema like establishment politician.
Okay.
Yes, corporate centrist economic positions mixed with the remnants of like overly woke language. You know, like someone who's like,
we're in the primary here.
I want public-private partnerships to leverage more jobs, and also I'm going to start with the land acknowledgement.
Yeah, I think that would go over pretty poorly.
That to me is the worst combo. Anyway, and love it.
Yeah, it's a funny question because it's like sort of like what's the worst movie of the year? Well, it's a movie so bad you never saw it. I do think like there's a kind of tie for worst right now, and it is a kind of certain old school corporate political speak. I don't mean corporate like in the policies, but just in the language and the rhetoric that we've got to move past. And, you know, one thing I talked to Pritzker about as well was just why do so many people feel as though Democrats don't have a vision? And his point was only, well, Democrats never have a vision. They have a primary and they pick one person, and that vision becomes the vision of the party, and the community, and Biden kind of holding that space and not using it. And then Kamala having to step in with the very limited time. And also, to be honest, just not being someone who I think we just doesn't have a particularly well-known worldview or ideology that kind of guides what we think she would do as president. So she becomes a kind of consensus that of the Democratic politics we already had, there's just this big open space for someone to come along and just sound different.
When I was president of Goldman Sachs, my deputy was Latinx. That's solid.
This is your nightmare candidate right here.
Oh, I'm just, that is, you go test them out. Yeah. Erickson Kiva asks, how do you think Trump would eulogize you on Truth Social?
What do you got, guys?
God, fun to think about. I hope he does. I hope he does. Although I take that back. I hope he does.
I'd like to outlive Trump. That's high on my bingo card.
I actually reached out to a friend in the administration. Mr. Trump actually did it for me. So let's roll that tape, please.
Is this going to be Ryan's voice again?
Promise you no.
Some guy named Tommy died today. Tommy Veter. Sloppy Tommy. What a loser. What a nobody. He worked for Barack Hussein Obama. That's when he peaked. I heard Obama had little Tommy carry the pallets of cash to Iran.
I heard
Sloppy Tommy gave Ukraine blankets when I delivered the javelins.
It's true.
Toothless two-bit Tommy blamed Benghazi on a YouTube video.
That's not fair.
YouTube
Toothless.
Can't kill you, Tommy. Your career has been dead for years.
That's true.
Really now good. He has a podcast. Wow. How original. A 40-something white guy with a podcast. Stop the presses. Talkie, talkie, Tommy. The problem is no one is listening. He probably died of Trump derangement syndrome. They call it TDS. But we'll never know because no one cares that you're gone, Tommy.
Wow, that was really good.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Tough ending there.
That was That's really good.
Thank you, Seb Gorka, for lining that up.
That was really good. Sloppy Tommy.
Seb Gorka is who you got to do that, huh?
He's my guy.
That was fantastic. I think that's it. I don't think anyone else needs to go.
Perfect. No, that was really good.
Perfect. Wow. I'll
thank you, AI.
I really like that. And we all love AI. Really good. Really good.
Play that at your
really
funeral.
Hey, Tommy,
for sure.
Why don't you take that cup of water and just pour it on the ground?
Oh, my God. Back to the worst primary candidate. There's another one.
That whole water thing is like just made up.
Not
too.
True. Not true. Electricity costs? Very true.
Yeah, it's not totally, water. It's not totally not true, but it's
like everything we do has like a cost or in terms of there's water consumption. Like you buy a pair of jeans that's like a year's worth of AI.
Well, it just matters where you're putting the servers, where the water comes from. That you know, there's limited water indeed. And different water in water sure. tables. So, but yes, it's for the most part, just for the facts.
Niles.
No, let's get into the AI thing. No, keep going.
Niles asks, this is an interesting one. You have the opportunity to replace one Trump cabinet member, but you have to do the job for the rest of the Trump term and be loyal to Trump. Who do you choose to replace? This is the tricky thing of this is like, what does being loyal to Trump mean in this role? Like, you just
do what he says.
You have to just do what you think he'd want you to do, or do you have to like if he gives you an order, you have to do it?
Well,
I assume the latter.
It's a question a lot of people have asked themselves and then failed, yeah. right? Well, because it's sort of like, can you do a version? Another way of asking that question is there a version of doing this job where you feel you could do good for the country without pissing him off so thoroughly that you're ejected?
Right.
Which is, I think, what the question
is
asking.
That's sort of where I took it to.
I kind of think the easy answer is RFK Jr. Yeah.
Yes, that was mine.
Right, because
yes,
you could just Trump thinks RFK is kind of crazy and he just thinks it's like politically beneficial and you could walk back a ton of shit and Trump would never even read the memo about it.
Hey, I just looked under the microscope and aspirin doesn't cause autism anymore.
There we go. Tylenol's
fine. Mr. Trump, good news. You fixed the vaccines. They all work now. Yeah, you did that. We did it. We checked them out.
We took some of your DNA from your blood sample. We put them in the vaccines and now everyone's living to 100.
And everybody's you. You're everybody. And maybe if you, so in a way you should care about them.
Good job, Mr. Trump.
Because they're you. You're them.
Yeah, he hates his kids too. Who'd you be, Dan?
I think that's the right choice.
You're not a Brooke Rollins guy?
No, not Brooke Rollins. I guess maybe you could be Scott Bessent. I mean, you want your man to punch people?
Yeah, you trying to beat up everybody.
Like, you can't do, like getting taking Pete Hegseth off the board would be very good, but you're going to have to do,
you're blowing up boats.
Same with Pam Bondi. Obviously, same with Kristi Noem. I don't think you can convince them.
Those are the worst.
So I'm trying to think of the most impactful.
You're working closely with Corey Lewandowski. Closely.
I mean, in every way.
Dan, I think you could pull out Marco Rubio because he is also kind of like executing on his own plan for regime change in Venezuela because he thinks it will help topple the Cuban government. And I think if you stop doing that, Trump would be like, all right. Cool.
Yeah, he doesn't really.
Marco Rubio's an option.
I thought about that too. Although a little high profile, it's going to be harder to do things without him.
Yeah.
Well, like if you cared passionately about, I mean, you don't want to be education because you've already just eliminated the Department of Education. So that seems like not a great place to go. You know what?
Also, weakest cabinet.
The answer is Sean Duffy.
Sean Duffy.
You think the answer is Sean Duffy?
I think that you could go a long way to just bring a small measure of competence to air travel in the United States. And I don't think Trump cares about a lot of the stuff that he's doing.
True, actually. That's just literally making the trains run out of time.
Okay.
That's a good one.
I think it's RFK.
RFK is the first choice, for sure. For sure. Okay. I don't dispute that.
We'll get to lots more of your questions after the break, but a quick reminder before we get to that. We're headed to New Zealand and Australia in February. If you've ever wondered how grumpy Dan gets after a trans-Pacific flight, this is your chance. Pod Save America, the Pod Save America hopefully just visiting tour lands in Auckland, New Zealand on the 11th, and then three cities in Australia after that, Melbourne on the 13th, Brisbane on the 14th, and Sydney on the 16th. If you're a listener in New Zealand or Australia, we'd really love to see you at these shows. Head to crooked.com/events to get your tickets. When we come back, more questions.
It's always so jarring to see Dan in his travel juicy couture velour tracksuit.
He looks good though.
It's always so, it's like, oh yeah, that's his look, that's his flight look. Pod Save America is brought to you by Cook Unity.
The new year is a time where you get to do a reset.
That's
right. You get to do a resolution.
Fresh slate.
Yeah. All the teams are at 0-0. You know what they say? Mm-hmm. And Cooked Unity brings restaurant level flavor to your fresh start with chef designed dishes that balance nourishment, creativity, and everyday luxury. Choose your own path with new meal collections like fiber maxing, mood boosting, better for sleep, and protein forward. I want a fiber max. I want a mood boost. Then I don't need sleep. Cook Unity is also launching Chef's Table Lunar Feast Drop, a limited two-week collaboration where chefs celebrate Lunar New Year with symbolic fortune-filled dishes and behind-the-scenes storytelling.
They got a really good barbecue chicken.
Oh.
It's like a gooey mac and cheese side barbecue chicken. Delicious.
That's awesome.
Comfort food. Fills you up. Feeds a bunch of people. You will love it.
With Cook Unity, there's no cooking, shopping, or thinking about how to get the nutrition and comfort meals you need every week. Meals are delivered fully cooked. Just heat up in as little as 5 minutes. Choose from a rotating seasonal menu of over 300 meals or let Cook Unity's platform provide personalized recommendations. New celebrity chefs are always joining, like restaurateur Marcus Samuelson or Michelin-starred Rick Bayless. You know, it's interesting that people say restaurateur, but it's not. Mm. It's restaurateur. There's no N there.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
there isn't.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what there is. A commitment-free subscription starting as low as $11 per meal. Skip deliveries, pause, or cancel anytime. Taste comfort and craftsmanship in every bite from the award-winning chefs behind Cook Unity. Go to cookunity.com/crooked or enter code crooked before checkout to get 50% off your first order. That's 50% off your first order by using code crooked or going to cookunity.com/crooked.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Lil Monster Ramara asks, how granular is your audience demo information? Curious who else in Canada is listening.
Just you. You're the one.
Lil, I know where you live, what you're doing right now. You look great. Podcast data is shit. YouTube data is interesting. Get like demographics and stuff.
But we know how many people in Canada there are.
Yeah, we have like, we basically know like the IP address where you're kind of located, like city or town, whatever.
But 3% of the audience is Canada. I took a look. But that's about all we know.
But 3% of an enormous audience.
I can't even remember.
It's a small 3%. Piece of a giant fucking pie, I'll tell you that.
That's right.
I wonder.
And around 3% is UK too, and then it gets.
Yeah, it's like the English speaking. I wonder if it was bigger before our country started threatening to annex their country.
That would be a good. Yeah, let's get someone to.
It should be higher since then.
Well, they're just mad. Like, they're genuinely really pissed at
what
America,
did we do? Right? We're on the right side. Yeah. We're on the pro
Canada. We live here.
You've had Justin Trudeau on your podcast.
When I went to the Montreal Comedy Festival, when I was going through. Customs, there was a French speaking person at the gate, spoke with a French accent, and she said, where are you coming from? And I said, the US. And she said, how long are you staying? And I said, don't worry, not long, and I'm sorry. And she laughed and he's like, we know it is not you. we know.
hope Australia and New Zealand say that to us.
I know, me too.
Dr. Michael A. Urban and a whole lot of other Blue Sky users ask, why are the pod boys stewing their brains in the Nazi cesspool that is Twitter? What is the actual point?
You call it stewing a brain. I call it building up a resistance. Building up my immune system.
I'm literally just getting like articles. That's all I'm doing. And honestly, like, no offense, Dr. Urban, I will never go to Blue Sky. I have no interest. If I wanted to have horrific intra-democratic party left fights all day long,
close our office door,
teleport back to 2016 and live in that fucking hellscape. I never will do it. No offense.
our job is analyzing politics and the news and what's happening in politics. And that is happening still. All the journalists and politicians are on Twitter. And if they weren't, I wouldn't be there. It is also like, yeah, I'm sure it is a Nazi cesspool. My experience on Twitter is not just like scrolling and seeing Nazi shit all the time.
Yeah, I click away from that.
I just don't see. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm following who I follow.
Get a lot of Fuentes clips.
Well, yeah, there's the Fuentes. Well, that's part of our job also, like knowing what that fucker's saying. And so it's like I got my news column, I got my pundit column, I got my clips column of what's so it's just like I'm there for that kind of shit.
You have a curated experience.
I post something once in a while.
John's got the Matrix source.
You post something once in a while.
I do.
Once in a while.
Once in a while. And a while can be any length of time, in a sense. But I think the bigger problem is not that Blue Sky is a better place and Twitter is a worse place because there's more Nazis than there are. It's that collectively it's the stewing in the kind of anger and antipathy and like different kind of negativities that I do think is genuinely bad for me. And I go through bouts of, I post much less than I ever did. And it's actually rare that I post, and I am trying to use it less, but it is useful. It just is, and it's less useful than it was, and that sucks because of Musk, but it's still useful.
I know a lot of the focus when the discussion is Blue Sky is like the tenor of the conversation there, and it's mostly liberal and all that, but I tried Blue Sky for a little while, and my biggest problem is because the user base is so small, chart the other a couple weeks ago, and it showed that like at the bottom of the chart of all social media apps is like Blue Sky and Truth Social. The user base is like just tiny, tiny, tiny. And if you're looking for news there, it just doesn't update as fast because it's just not, there's not as many people on it. And so it's not as reliable for late breaking news happening every second.
The change to how Twitter operates for the average person, not the people who are premium users who have the equivalent of what used to be TweetDeck, where you can curate your own feed, has become a terrible way to follow news because even now your following tab is algorithmically based and no longer chronological.
You can adjust that.
I know there's a very complicated way to fix it, but that being the default now, like that's annoying for politics.
That's terrible, by the way.
It's horrible for sports. Like if you're scrolling, because you'll just get stuff from like 5 hours before or the first quarter of a
it's
game.
It's annoying.
It's made it much harder to follow news. But you can, if you have a premium account, which we have without being paid for because of follower size, just for people wondering if we're giving Elon our money, you can set up a feed that feels much more like old Twitter, where you're only seeing the people that you want to see in the order in which they tweet, which is a much better experience for following news and politics.
Yes. Josephine with two Canadian flag emojis asks, would John Lovett consider being on any other reality TV shows, perhaps The Amazing Race?
Yes. I would like to.
Okay. Which ones?
I'd like to be on Amazing one Race? For more than a couple, you know, a couple hours is my goal. Amazing Race, it seems like it's a lot of international travel and economy for me, but the I also slept on a floor in the beach, so I can do that.
You rough it all the time.
I liked my short turn in on Survivor didn't go the way I wanted, but it's a fun, I don't know what it is, but there's something about the like kind of participating in that kind of charged environment where you're not in charge. Like I like there's something really, I don't know. I really find it interesting. I like the competitive ones. So Amazing Race, something like that.
Traders. You have to go on Traders. Like that is the most likely place for you. Mm. You would be great at it. It would be so much fun for all of us. I don't know who's in charge of Traders, but we have to make this happen.
Yeah, we gotta get that Peacock on the phone.
I got a couple of pitches for you.
Okay.
What about MILF Manor? It's a show where middle-aged women dated each other's sons.
Sure. I mean, I guess I could hand out towels or something.
Yep. What about The Swan from 2004?
Where I get a full makeover, where I get facial surgery from Dr. Terry Dubrow.
Contestants underwent multiple plastic surgeries and weren't allowed to see mirrors.
Yep. I watched that when it aired.
That's crazy.
I actually interviewed Dr. Terry Dubrow about that very program and the ways in which it was seen as a horror
and
the downfall of civilization. But yeah, I'd do that too. Why not?
Celebrity boxing. You know what?
Boxing has never made sense to me because as a workout, it's asymmetrical. You're always facing one way.
Oh, interesting.
And I never liked that. I never liked that. They never turn the other side. Not for me. No, thank you.
Last one, Flavor of Love?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's got to be a producer listening.
Love Island?
Love Island.
Yeah, another show I can go home first on, I suppose. Yeah. can they somehow send me home before they've clicked? They're like, oh, welcome to Love Island. You're already not here. That's so weird. It actually, you know that Love Island, I believe, is down the beach from the Ponderosa. So when I was in the Ponderosa hiding from you guys, pretending I was still competing, I remember we were driving by, and I think we drove by where Love Island was actually being taped, I believe, at the same time.
Oof, oof. B-more Seymour asks, love it. 8 little Hanukkah presents or 1 big one? You must choose.
I would say 1 big Hanukkah present. 1 big Hanukkah present. I think that's great. As a kid, the other thing too is for most kids that get 8 presents, the first 7 or 6 are just little tiny gelt or like coins or socks or something really small. And then you get the 1 big one. You know, you're like, come on, be something that you have to plug in, you know? Come on, something with a controller.
It is. I was on the way to school this morning. Charlie asked me, he was like, so, because they had a Hanukkah celebration, their Christmas celebration today. And he's like, so what's the deal with Hanukkah? Like, what happens there? And I'm like, well, there's 8 nights, 8 presents, 1 each night. And all of a sudden he's like,
it's a good pitch.
Just, he's like, and you were just telling me that Christmas is 8 nights away. And I was complaining that I have to wait that long. And he was like, I could see him like,
And he's like, oh.
Can I do both?
And mom's Jewish, I guess.
Jill H. asks, for the parents, do you do timeouts? Why or why not?
Not yet. They're just too young.
Mm. Just a belt for now?
Yeah, I know. I take his car keys away.
Oh, God. That was good.
Take the car keys away from my 18-month-old.
Dan?
No, we don't do timeouts. We do consequences we try to make be associated with whatever the
punishment fits the crime.
Yeah, whatever the infraction is, right? Which when they're littler is easier. Where it's like you throw
smoke
the
whole pack,
the toy goes away.
Smoke the whole carton.
No timeouts with us yet.
Hey, where's parenting culture right now on discipline? Are we still in the gentle parenting age, or people?
There's a backlash of gentle parenting happening.
Okay. Yeah, I think so too.
I don't know. I just try to talk it out. So far it's working. We'll see. wait till Teddy's 2 now, so who knows. All right. What Lauren JS1 asks, what's the best book you read this year? Does anyone have an answer that's not Abundance?
I was waiting for you to say that.
I didn't yeah.
You know what I just read randomly? So I was like going to bed at night. I read like 1929, which was excellent, a great book,
Andrew
but
Sorkin.
It's like, it's not anxiety inducing to imagine, like he draws a lot of great parallels between the stock market crash in 1929, and the economy today. So it's not like, it's not the most relaxing kind of narrative. it occurred to me, I mean, Hannah pointed out to me, she was like, you're constantly reading like horrible, like depressing things. So I was like, okay, I Googled like best book about sports. And I got a few options, and one was Open, which is Andre Agassi's biography.
Oh yeah,
Which is like super well regarded. So I'd never like read it or heard of it. So I just did the thing where you can download the first chapter and read it. It is fantastic. It is so good. It's so interesting. He's such a thoughtful guy. He's super honest about like taking crystal meth and like playing tennis with a hairpiece and
the hairpiece?
Marriage falling apart and hating. He fucking hated tennis. Hated it.
Really?
As a small child, he's one of those dads who literally chose their house in Las Vegas based on where he had the space to build a tennis court and then force his kid to hit balls all day long. And he made him a star, like one of the best ever, but fucking miserable. And it's an unbelievable book.
The hairpiece story is so interesting because as a kid, I remember I played tennis as a kid and I was terrible. But Andre Agassi was so cool. And
so
he was
cool.
So cool because of the hair.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the hair was fucking fake. He was terrified all the time. It made him a worse player because he was worried that his hairpiece would fall off while he was playing.
Like at Wimbledon.
Like a shocking thing to learn.
He also would play in jean shorts. You remember that?
So cool.
Oh, yeah.
So cool.
I remember that.
He was treated as like a punk. He was just like, I don't know. I want to wear what I want to wear.
All right.
Great book.
Good one.
Highly recommend it.
So we started a book club at Crooked this year, and I wanted to do this. And my only sort of a rule for what not book we chose was that it would be fiction and it would be not of this era, whatever that means. And our first, and so far only book we've done is East of Eden, which I'd never read and I know is a classic, but was riveting.
Yeah,
and
really
I absolutely loved it. And then I've been reading the Eric Larson books. And I read, I think. I talked about this last year. I read The Demon of Unrest about the Civil War, the rise, the coming of the Civil War, which is incredible. I'm reading Dead Wake, which is about the sinking of the Lusitania.
It's a great book.
It's fucking awesome. It is riveting, riveting. I just read Devil in the White City too, which I also recommend, but I'm going to read. Listen, I know I'm done talking about Kazuo Ishiguro. That's last year's business. Now it's all about Eric Larson.
You did one pod today.
Yeah, I did talk about Ishiguro in a different pod I did with John. Poor John.
Have you read In the Garden of the Beasts?
No, that's next.
That is great too.
So good.
That's next. I wanted a Nazi break.
Yeah.
I'm on a Nazi break. Am I reading?
Understood.
You're in the wrong business.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
No kidding. In my life.
Dan, you're a reader.
I think my favorite book this year is probably What We Can Know by Ian McEwan, which is very much not a book I would normally like other than I like Ian McEwan, which is a story about, like, set in the future, like in a post-nuclear accident climate disaster, where there's a guy who's researching about a dinner party. He's an academic who's trying to find out, who's researching about a dinner party that happened in our current time right now, where a very famous poet who wrote a poem that then got lost to history. And it's about how he sort of, it takes place in this time and that time. And it's how he wants to find out the secret why that poem was lost to history. It's a great book. Ian McEwan, who wrote Atonement, is a great writer. And it was bizarre. I almost didn't read it because the description seemed so unlike something I would normally like, but it was excellent.
I'm going to read it as well, in part because Dan, one thing that people were saying was interesting about it is that in part it is about how much information we create right now.
Yes.
And what it will be like for future historians to try to understand the past, not because things are hard to know, but because everything is knowable.
Hmm. Right. Like, so cool. As he's doing this, he has access to all of their texts and like location data from their phone about like who walked where, what day, what they were texting each other, all the emails they sent. And so it is like it's like too much information. It is almost alarming to think, not that people are going to be doing history on us per se, but like what someone could know years from now about, like in sort of first person information from a time period. It's very interesting.
Wow. As you know, I don't read.
How many times did you read Abundance this year?
I can't remember a single like fiction book that I read this year, actually, because it was all books for offline.
Want a fun one? Hail Mary. By Andy Weir, I think is the guy who
wrote Project Hail Mary. And you should read it before the movie comes out.
Yeah,
okay,
it's
that's
a
cool.
Blast.
Hail Mary,
Project Hail Mary.
Project Hail Mary. It's really fun. I won't even tell you what it's about.
You just gotta read it.
Yeah. Great. I need a book.
So good. What a blast.
Okay. Amphistaff asks, "What's been your favorite new TV series or season of an existing show this year?"
I just have not watched anything.
Pluribus.
Pluribus.
So into Pluribus.
I'm loving Pluribus.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you. Watch it, guys.
Everybody's watching Pluribus.
I would say
it's hard to describe too, because also like you don't want to give away even.
Just go into it. Just yes.
Yeah, most of our viewing is just like visual Xanax. It's like Great British Baking Shows from like 6 years ago. You know, put you right to bed.
I know.
I think my favorite show this year was Task.
I heard that was good.
It was so good. I mean, it is like so. I would say it does not serve the same purpose as Great British Baking Show. It is not relaxing, but it is like very emotional, very exciting. It's like truly a great show. Like it's been a long time since there was a show that I like thought about so much afterwards, like this one. And then I've watched a bunch of Hunting Wives. It was very entertaining. There's been a bunch of shows that are like super entertaining and like kind of good and like The Beast in Me. We just watched All Her Fault, which we were just talking to you and Emily about the other night.
That's about the 2020 election.
Yeah. The 2016 election.
Oh, 2016. Oh, it jumps back and forth. That's kind of
you know what season
2024
about.
You're thinking.
Yeah. Oh, what did I say?
You said 2020.
Oh, fuck. No. Oh, yeah. You know what I meant.
The joke worked.
All right.
It did.
I'm watching Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, which got turned on to, and it is very entertaining. It's ridiculous, but what a blast.
Death by Lightning was great.
I'm excited to watch that.
Really good.
I gotta watch some stuff.
I am one episode into the Ken Burns American Revolution
Catch you in 2020.
Don't spoil it. Yeah.
Well, I was so surprised that I'm like, all right, yeah, let's get into this. And I see how many episodes. And I started the first episode. I'm like, just each episode is quite long.
I remember my cousin
fascinating.
Growing up had the Civil War like VHS collection. And it was like 12 tapes, yes. You know?
I feel like this is the same thing.
I just struggle with documentaries about a time before audio and video. Mm. Because I'm just like, okay, why don't you guys type this up? And then I'll fucking read it. I'm sorry. That's how I
Ken Burns does a good job.
I'm sure he does. This is not fair, what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's fair. All right. Love It added some hypotheticals.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess this is just like, do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, there's sort of just sort of thought. Originally, I was going to have more kind of classic, like, you have the fins of a fish, but the head of a lion. And I couldn't come up with anything that was good. And all so right. I just did other pitches.
That's so the first one is, everyone should wear a name tag all the time with their first name on it.
Yes.
Like, it should be seen as rude and standoffish to not have a name tag on.
Yes, yes, yes. I will pound the table for this one because I end up... people say names and they go whoosh. Mm. And then I feel awkward talking to them. And so you feel more standoffish. You engage with people less because you feel like a bad person because you don't remember their name. And if you could just look down.
I'll go one further. I'll go one fucking further.
Tattoo it to your forehead?
Everyone should have a little name tag in the world, both for what Tommy's talking about, people that you named you've forgotten, but also just in the world remembering that every person has a first name. Every car, while you're driving it, should have the first name of the driver just kind of in front. Ooh, okay. So that you see the person in the other car not as an enemy who's in your way, but Jeff or Donna. And then it's like, it's hard to hold your horn down at Donna.
Has it worked for social media?
Good point.
doxer in chief.
Though the worst people are anonymous, but except for the people with their names, which are even worse. So yeah, I take your point. No bad ideas in a brainstorm.
I think it's a good idea. I'm with you, Tommy. I just can't. And it's also people that you...
It's always a kid things.
Yeah. But you can make a little jewelry. You can make it your own. It's special. It's the same way that now not having a phone is seen as obtuse and strange, when before you didn't have to have one. It would just be like a cultural thing. No law or anything, but just like, oh, you don't wear a name tag. I guess you don't want people to talk to you. Weird, you bad person. Get that name tag on. And then the people on the internet being like, actually, neurodivergence, they don't want to wear. And I'm not saying you have to wear a name tag. Now I'm going to fight about ableism. What did I do?
Yeah.
It's just an idea. I'm sorry. I take it back.
Your comment about tags made me think of the best movie of 2025, which is Coroner to the Stars.
Oh,
which was about
wow.
toe tags. Dr. Thomas Noguchi, the former LA County Chief Medical Coroner. Fantastic documentary.
Yeah.
Wow. Highly recommended.
Wow.
Ben Heathcote right there.
Check it out.
Okay. Every four-year college degree should be divided into 3 years and one floating year that is only available after age 40.
Oh.
Love it. I'm in.
This is great. These are great ideas.
It's
great.
Yes. That, I want this to happen.
And I want you to know.
And I'm going next year.
Because I did.
Seriously.
I will say, because I
go to a new school?
You can go. Yeah, well, we'll
just try it out.
I actually was gaming it out because what I was thinking, and I was like getting into the actual policy mechanics of it. And because you'd say like, well, how are you going to pay for it? Well, you were already going to pay for a four-year degree. And if you pay for your fourth year of college and then go into the workforce, it's no worse economically than having just been in college for that year. And so ostensibly you would pay for the year in advance, and then that money is in some kind of endowment growing to help you afford the year you get when you're over 40. Like I was actually, I think there's an actual way to do it. It's almost like everybody gets a kind of sabbatical.
Wow, you get a pay for.
And then, yeah, I have a fucking pay for. And so that's better than Republicans in Congress, on the OBB. And then when you turn 40, it's like, it's customary. At some point you get your sabbatical, and then maybe people skip a midlife crisis, and their midlife crisis is they go and learn cooking back at the school or somewhere near there. You know, you have to go to the same college.
I think that makes it a more interesting thought experiment.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so now people with families got to go back to Holy Cross.
Back to Worcester.
Yeah. Okay.
But
okay.
No, you leave your family. Love Holy Cross. I assume.
Oh, you leave your family for a year. So this is now a kind of a Rumspringa kind of people get to escape their lives for a year. In my mind, it was just you get
Can
to
I
go
to
learn.
Am
some,
I going to spring break again?
Yeah, spring That's break. Right. It's because in my mind, it's like I do feel like, oh, like I there were so many things I didn't learn or didn't think I cared about. Now
I was thinking
do.
About this purely in social fun terms.
Yeah, I can see the wheels turning in John's eyes. He's just like
That's
back
so
at the
funny.
Bar at the frat house or whatever. And love,
That's
it's like,
so
what
funny.
Theoretical math class could I take?
I was 100% focused on like maybe I would do physics. That's real. I did not think about socializing for a second. Like,
this time I'm going to Florida or Arizona.
Yeah.
I was like, now you have a little more money, so you can go on a better spring break. You're not like nine people to a hotel room.
Yeah, no, yeah, like, I was at South Padre Island. Yeah,
Myrtle Beach. Back in the grill.
Like, I would like to do like kind of update my statistics, you know, get back into it.
I do think about all the books I didn't read and think, wish I'd just read those.
Mm. There you go. Every year, we do a nationwide ranked choice vote on the top apps with chat functions, WhatsApp, email, Slack, etc., and one is eliminated.
Oh, yes.
That's all. Just one goes.
Great idea.
Mm-hmm. One goes.
Yes, because we just keep stacking them up, and they have to check them all.
It's unbelievable. And once you're eliminated, you're out for good.
Yeah, you're out for fucking good. The app is deleted. I mean, a lot of their success is kind of a network effect of having been picked up and taken up by others, right? The only reason Slack managed to get in is because they figured out that they could take over a business at a time. Otherwise, they would have faced the hurdle that the fact that we don't need another way to fucking communicate.
Mm.
One more. I'm going to throw in one more just for fun, which is double the number of people in Congress.
Okay.
Not only that,
why?
I would say double the number in the House.
To shrink the districts?
Because the districts are now kind of in this in-between. We have had the same number of members for a country of much fewer people, and it now defeats the purpose of having a local representative. And all this talk about gerrymandering, in part, it's like, well, what should a district be? Well, all districts are kind of pretty varied now because they take in so many different people. They're much bigger than they used to be. So much smaller districts would mean you'd know your congressperson. It's just more democracy. And I actually think Democrats could like make that part of a platform. We want more democracy. We want members of Congress to have fewer people they report to in the House.
And they'd get so much more done with all that more people.
Double the Randy Fines. No, right. There's some merit to this. Okay. I like this idea.
Think about that. I'm going to look into that.
Think about that.
I not thought about it. There's also probably a really good argument for paying them way more. Like, I think Singapore, you make like $1 million a year if you're a elected official.
Mm.
You just couldn't get a higher quality person.
Yeah.
Today's episode is sponsored by Strawberry.me. You know that feeling, that nagging sense that something in your life isn't working. Maybe it's your job. Maybe it doesn't excite you anymore. Maybe it's your routine. Every day feels the same. Maybe it's your goals. They always seem out of reach. Instead of making a change, you tell yourself, figure it out later. Stop waiting. Start making progress with Strawberry.me coaching. Strawberry.me isn't therapy. It's not just advice. It's a success strategy for your future that helps you set clear goals, build a real roadmap, and follow through. Because let's be honest, knowing what to do and doing it are two very different things. Strawberry.me matches you with a certified coach who helps you tackle career changes and big life decisions. If you're stuck, this is how you move forward. Look, maybe you come from a community of friends and family that's a little too supportive.
Mm.
You need a kick in the ass.
Yeah, maybe that's right.
Maybe everyone around you is really mean to you all the time.
Not
you
happy medium.
To just support you. Strawberry.me has got you covered either way. Go to strawberry.me/crooked and get 50% off your first coaching session. That's strawberry.me/crooked.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, let's go to our resolutions. Reminder, we're going to play each of our 2025 resolutions first, and then we'll give each of us a chance to explain ourselves, and then we can all offer up our resolutions for 2026. Who wants to go first?
Dan, you go first.
Sure, why not?
What do you got, Dan?
All right, let's play dance.
One, I am going to make another run at my attention span. And the thing I've started doing since election, which has caused me to miss many of John's best Twitter fights, is to put my phone away before I put my kids to bed and not look at it for the rest of the night. I want to take up yoga in 2025. Oh, I started doing it some this year.
How'd that go?
Well, I was one for two.
Yeah, how's your asanas? How's our?
I would say the yoga went
dog.
Much better than my attention span.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Dan?
Yeah. So
that is a shock. I thought it would have been the other way around.
Yeah. So really, the attention span. Like I've been wrestling with this for a year now. I'm very concerned about the impact of like short form video on my brain. I really used to, as I said, put my phone away when I put the kids to bed and not look at it again until right before bed, just to like make sure that nothing was on fire or anything. That has failed. The phone is back. But I have done yoga, not every week, but maybe every, on average every 2 weeks for the last year. So I feel pretty good about that.
Dan, will you do a tree pose with me right now?
No, I will not. Oh, that's for the premiere subscribers.
Paywall.
You can see.
I want everyone in the room.
Crooked.com/friends.
Only Dan's chakra.
You can see only Dan's.
No tree pose. Yeah. I don't believe this resolution until I see a fucking tree pose. All right. I'll go next.
What's
your resolution?
We do all of ours, and then we're going to do. Are we doing?
No, we do one at a time.
So I do my New Year's resolution for next year.
Let's hear it.
Okay. So I will continue for the third year in a row to work on my attention span. So I have three this year because I figure more I have, the better chance I have succeeding at least once. The second, which runs completely diametrically opposed to the other one, is one I'm stealing from my friend John Favreau from 2024, which is I'm going to post more.
Okay. Wow. You're all liking it.
Unbelievable.
I think like I really have, like Lovis said, like I have, like I still use Twitter way too much. I look at it too much, but I do see that I have stopped posting. I've stopped like promoting our stuff, promoting my stuff, like putting our point of view in the world. And it is like a tool in which we can, even in the smallest way possible, like influence things. And I sort of come to hate it. I hate the responses to it. I hate the criticism from our side, the other side. I hate the feeling of it, but I think I have to like suck that up and just like do it. Cause it's part of what like, we do content, like this is what we do, so you kind of have to do it. So I have to toughen up there.
Post and mute.
I just feel like that's kind of weak. You got to swim in the fuck.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
If you're gonna put it out there, you gotta live with the consequences.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, if you don't, yeah, it's like you don't cook if you're not willing to do the dishes. That's stolen valor.
And so the third one is one that is harder to hold me accountable for, which is both probably a feature and a bug, but. I've been thinking a lot about how, like in my life, and this is true of all of us, that like for a long time in our careers, we were always like in positions where we were like had jobs that were like harder than maybe we should have at the time or above our station in life and like sort of live with the discomfort of pushing ourselves all the time. And I feel now that we've done this podcast for a long time. I've done MessageBox for 5 years now. And like, I kind of like know what I'm good at. And I know what I'm not good at. And I feel like I've become very good at avoiding the things I'm not good at. And so like, I do like heading into 2026, like want to push myself to be a little less comfortable in what I do, like to like sort of lean into things that I know are not my favorite things to do, or I'm not as good at and try to do more of them and like challenge myself more than just like keep doing the thing that like, I know how to do, if that makes sense. Cause that was like for my whole life before basically left the White House was always in a position of like, not that I want to live like this again, but where it's like, we're always like one step away from like absolute fucking disaster in any of our careers and like living with that. I don't live with that stress, but I'm going to find something from like between there and like pure comfort. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's funny. There's like a, I think of like, there's like a natural trajectory, which is like when you're younger, if you feel comfortable, you don't necessarily feel safe because you want to be on to the next thing, right? And so you achieve some level of understanding of what you're doing, and then there must be something wrong. You have to go find the next thing. That's what I was like anyway, where like, oh, I like had written a comedy. Now I got to write a drama. I'd been a speechwriter. Now I'd be a comedy writer. And I think the motivation was very defensive and not based in what, like it wasn't a well-made decision. It was more about feeling like I don't want to be part of any club that would have me as a member. And what's funny is I do think then you go through a phase of then thinking, oh no, the goal is to be comfortable in what you're doing. And then you get older and it's like, no, that's actually a recipe for allowing yourself to be incurious and to be stuck in your ways and to kind of lose the plasticity of your brain.
Very well said.
So I feel the same way.
Cobra pose?
He's low cobra?
Low cobra. Right on.
Low Cobra.
My one small resolution is I want to try to figure out if I can do it, if I'm too old to do a dragon squat. That's right. You all heard it. Put me on record.
Googling that.
Careful.
Ah, I only look at dragon squats in my incognito window.
Love it. You want to go next?
I can go next. Let's see what I said last year. We are coming to the end of a year where we made a lot of shows and we did a ton of content and there's a lot happening. And I want to try next year to do a little bit less, a little bit better.
Nope.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's funny. I think
a little bit less, a little bit. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Quality over quantity.
Yeah. I feel like I did a little bit more of the same. I don't think I did anything worse. Like,
you added like an entire series.
Yeah, I think we did.
You did more.
I did more.
And a ton of YouTube shit.
I did more. We did a lot more. One way I do think I upheld this is we really have tried to make the Love It or Leave It monologue something we focus on and not just have it be a run of jokes, but try to figure out what we're saying about the week. So I think there's been being a little bit more deliberate to some of what we've been doing, which I think, and by the way, even thinking about how we do interviews, I think we've all like kind of stepped back and tried to think about like how to be, I guess really what I want to be is more deliberate. And I think I'm trying. I think that in fairness. So my resolutions, so I don't want to post more, but I do want to write more. And I have not been using Twitter that much, but especially in really kind of tense moments, maybe for myself, maybe because I think it has some value, I'm not sure. I've been writing against the type of the medium. So like Twitter is for just thrown off takes. And I've been writing these long
Bill Ackman-length
things, at times Bill Ackman-length things, and people make fun of them. I don't really care. But like I just like as a place to be thoughtful and do what is not natural for the medium, which is kind of lay out fully what I'm thinking, what somebody said without attacking them bothered me. I still do the dunking when I get on there sometimes, whatever. But I've been actually enjoying that kind of writing. And so what I want to do is find a place, maybe it's find a way to write that way, maybe on Substack, and then post some of it on social media. But I want to be a little bit more deliberate of laying things out, especially because I find, I forget until I do it, when you actually sit down and really write down something, you actually clarify your own thinking in a way that carries through. And it's just a muscle that I used to work more, and I think it makes me better, and I want to get back to doing it. That's one. And then two, I have really gotten into cooking and baking, and I want to be more deliberate and methodical about it. And I want to learn more and actually not, and like really kind of learn technique and be able to cook without recipes. I want to host more dinner parties where I'm cooking things. I want to like really build up my skills because I like it. It's actually really, you can't be on your phone. And that is my second resolution.
Great.
That's a good one. Am I up? Okay.
All right, I can go.
I'll listen to this pain. I hate my voice.
I want to talk to more people off air, experts. I want to get good at using AI tools. I tried to use ChatGPT to write me a list of resolutions and I failed. Finally, I've been reading a book about mindfulness meditation, but I haven't been doing it. I think it'd be good to do it. It's good for you.
Mm-hmm. I did the experts thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
AI tools. I don't know.
You just proved it.
I did.
Earlier in this podcast.
I did at 3:45 today, sign up for a new AI service, pay them a bunch of money to make one thing that I'll probably mm-hmm. I need Rocket Runny to unsubscribe me. Mindfulness, no, not even close, not even a little bit, not even once, I don't think. So
hats, by the way, those were our
survivor hats.
Why we wore
the tribe
hats.
The tribe has spoken hats. What a year.
So my resolution is this is going to be a year of saying yes. Not to work shit. To things that are fun. So it's like, I think our work schedules are very regimented. For me, it's Monday, Tuesday, intense prep, record, and it makes you like feel hard to do shit. And it makes me not travel. I want to travel more and say yes to trips and get out of the office and do things and go places.
Love that for you.
That's great.
It's fun. I mean, my friend invited me to go on a trip to London for like a weekend, basically. And normally I would say no, but I'm going to go. Because I'm like, no, we're going to do this. The Australia thing we said, y'all said yes to. It's like,
I was genuinely shocked when we got a yes to that.
Being away from my kids for that long is like,
Tommy's always the hardest yes to get.
Yeah.
You know, I have a 3-year-old and a 18-month-old and, you know, came out of a pandemic. Like, sort of an anxiety-inducing thing to go to a new continent and be away from your kids for that long. I was like, you know what? Just do it.
So I'm excited for Tom reading between the lines. He's going to try ketamine and open his marriage. Things sound pretty exciting. It's a big year for Tommy. Tommy is saying yes.
So many jokes I want to make that will get me in more trouble.
All right. Let's go. My resolution this year. This one I'm gonna nail.
We know this
I
one.
I cannot fucking wait.
I know this. We know
more
this
more posting.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm more posting. He's more Twitter fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. You nailed
you
it.
You did it. You did nailed it. Honestly, I've never seen. I will tell you something. I will admit something. I thought that resolution was so stupid.
I know.
And it's so bad for you. And it's still, by the way, it might have been bad for you, but yeah. It wasn't stupid. you really were on to something.
I will say, though, for next year, very similar to you, like, write, and it's not just writing more, but I was doing a few of these, like, essays for offline at the beginning, and I found it, like, I used to hate writing until it was done. I mean,
yeah, right? Of course.
You write, and then you go through this horrible process, and then it's done, and you're like, oh, great, it's done. But for some reason, the offline essays I've enjoyed because it really does help me just, like, put down on paper, on a screen, what I'm thinking. It helps me clarify my thinking, mm-hmm. and I've, like, stopped caring about, I'm like, do they do well? Do people mm-hmm. like them? I don't care. Yeah, I'm just going to do it, same. And it's going to make me feel good, and it's helping me spend less time doing the takes on Twitter by, like, getting everything down. It's almost like you get it out of your system, so I like that.
You always get a thoughtful, charitable response from the internet and also friends.
Yeah, well... The internet, I don't really care about Twitter. I don't see the replies there. Once in a while, I dip into the Discord.
Oh yeah,
love you, Discord. But yeah, no, I think that's it. That's fun, and I'm also gonna try one night a week, like just no news. Just go home, and if I'm going to use the phone, it's
yes,
like
we'll carry the burden.
Yeah,
well, so that night will be Sundays and Wednesdays.
Yeah. Well, then who will take the watch? Who will guard the wall on Wednesdays?
Brian Stelter alone.
Yeah. Are you reading the news every single night in the evening?
Yeah. Well, I mean
he's
like,
never not reading the news. He's never not
never
reading
not
news.
Reading. I'm scrolling here and there. It's not like I'm sitting for a full news. You know,
I'm opening tabs.
Yeah, really? Yeah, but it's too often. It's just got like just at least this is like a baby step thing. Just
it's
one
not,
night.
It's not
one
good
night.
For you.
I think it's
not good.
I think you should do that. I think
can
do
I
that.
Weigh in on your posting?
Sure.
Your posting resolution last year, because I think it is, as Levitt said, ridiculous. But you did it well. But I think the truth of it is not the volume of the posting. Like what you really resolved to do was that you were going to say what you believed, and you're not going to care what anyone else said.
Yeah,
which I think is very admirable, and you really,
it's funny, Dan, because my final resolution for next year, because I thought about.
Well, you
that.
Already did this one.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now you're gonna start caring again.
No. I was like, we are heading into a midterm season. There's gonna be Democratic primaries, and then we're gonna, then it's gonna be talking about the Democratic presidential primary in 2028, and I feel like I want to be not very open and honest about both. Criticism of Democratic candidates, but in a way that is constructive. I want to like think about the criticism so that it's not just like you suck and you can't do anything about it, but like, okay, what would I do? Right. And so be constructive that way. And if I really like something someone did, say it and be honest about it and not feel like if I say everyone's gonna be like, oh, you're in the tank for so and so, because it's like, I just want to be as honest as I can be about all the Democrats running for office. Because I think that sometimes I feel like in the past you're like, I don't want to be too tough because then they'll be mad at me, or I want to be too nice because then people's,
Well, it was so brutal last time. It sucked last time in 2019. Everyone was mad at us all the time for being too, like, everyone thought we were in the tank for this candidate. Like, at the same time, there were people who were like, the Pod Bros are all for Bernie. And then it would be all the Bernie people would be like, the Pod Bros suck. And I like, this goes to mind about being more uncomfortable is one of it is being less reticent about taking on criticism for things I say, right? Or right. Yeah. Or like being willing
to. And it's just sort of like taking people along with my like stream of consciousness thoughts about candidates that can sometimes change too, And it's like, I liked that speech. I didn't really like that. I thought that was good. I didn't think that was that great. Here's why, that kind of stuff.
It's funny because like for me, part of what I want to do, part of the reason I want to write a little bit more and step back a little bit more is I actually think like, I sometimes like, I lose sight of why, what is my value? And like, what is it that I offer? And I actually think like, I'm like my actual like political analysis, like I much rather step back and like think about something in a way that maybe is a little off kilter. Maybe it's not, turns out to be wrong, but like, I just would like to bring a little bit of more weirdness, which means really a little bit more of like things that are not currently kind of necessarily exactly what people are saying or talking about, you know, because I just want to like step outside of the scrum because I think I do a little better outside of the scrum. That's part of what I'm trying to do.
JDB Pritzker, can you do a dragon squat?
Mm. Yeah. Did you look up what a dragon squat is?
I did. It looks
really, really hard.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
It's difficult.
Dan, do Pilates with me next year.
Should we do it at Solid
Make
core?
That your resolution. Yeah.
Do Pilates?
Yeah.
Film it behind the paywall.
That was
behind
almost my Terminally Online today was the Solid Core feud.
Oh, yeah. I'm up to date.
All right, guys, that's our show for today. Happy New Year to everyone. Don't forget to take your Zbiotics. On Friday, we'll be dropping a special episode of our subscriber-only show, Inside 2025, into this feed. It's Lovett's conversation with legendary and reclusive Democratic strategist Philippe Reines.
I love that
description. What'd you guys talk about?
So Philippe played Donald Trump both in the Hillary Clinton debate prep and the Kamala Harris debate prep. Didn't get called on by Joe Biden because Joe Biden said, don't worry, I got this. He really went full method, and he's just an insightful person about how you deal with someone like Trump. That's, I think, partly why he had the kind of skill set to be Trump. So it was a great conversation, genuinely. One of my favorite conversations in a while.
Awesome. Check it out. And then we'll be back with a new show on Tuesday, January 6th. Bye, everyone.
We'll be wild.
If you want to listen to Pod Save America ad-free and get access to exclusive podcasts, go to crooked.com/friends to subscribe on Supercast, Substack, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts. Also, please consider leaving us a review. That helps boost this episode and everything we do here at Crooked. Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. Our producers are David Toledo, Emma Illick-Frank, and Saul Rubin. Our associate producer is Farah Safari. Austin Fisher is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive editor. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Naomi Sengel is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Ben Hefcoat, Mia Kelman, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, and Ryan Young. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription-exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.